Hey guys, this is Ian McCall, UFC flyweight, and you're listening to Talking Brawls.
Hello and welcome to the Talking Brawls podcast show. I'm your master of ceremonies, as always, Niall McGrath. Along with in the green corner, this man is a freestyle waffer fighting out of Black Rock, Dublin, Ireland. Mark, the Misery Moriarty. Mark, what's happening, bro? How are you?
I'm fantastical, Niall. I'm MMA'd out for the day, but ready to get going again.
good stuff. On the show this week, we have a star-studded show. We have Chris Lieben on the show, Ian McCall, and Gorgeous George of MMA Junkie. Mark, incredible interviews. How much did you enjoy that? It was really good, wasn't it?
Yeah, like, not tooting our own horn here, but yeah, pretty much exclusive act after exclusive.
Yeah, there's a good bit of exclusive material. And obviously,
is that egotistical? Can we say that?
You can say what you want in this podcast.
Oh, good times.
We're honest shitheads here, so, you know, we like to keep it real and not, beat around the bush. Obviously, crazy week in UFC. Obviously, we had UFC on FX, on Fuel last week, Weidman versus Munoz. And we had Strikeforce Rockhold versus Kennedy from the Rose Guard Arena in Portland. Mark, what you make of both the cards?
Well, no, I'm scared shitless because I had all these notes prepared and I had all these things I wanted to say, and in the last 3 or 4 days, they've all become completely irrelevant and no one cares anymore. But the fact is that the Fuel card, Munoz versus Weidman, was a really exciting fight when we saw Weidman emerge as a proper contender to Silva.
Man, he's the number one in my eyes.
He's there. And then all of a sudden Silva fucking vetoes it. So, pissed off about that. I thought the Strikeforce card was fucking fantastic. I thought Pat Healy did us proud. I thought there was some judging controversy, but Christ, he came through. He goes on to face Gilbert Melendez.
That's the way it's going to be. And just getting back to the Fuel TV card, I thought it was a real good card all round, actually. I really enjoyed it. One of the most I've enjoyed in a long time. Very impressed with Joey Beltran. Obviously, granite steel chin against James Tahuna.
It's a machine.
Very good performance. You had Francis Carmon, very impressive against Carlos Vermola. TJ Dillashaw, again, what a performance over Vaughn Lee. I didn't expect it to end that quick, but it did. Really good card from top to bottom, and obviously we'll get into that later on with Gorgeous George. But obviously as well on MMA Junkie tomorrow night, you can catch Cage Warriors from Cage Warriors 48 from London. It's live on MMAJunkie.com, so be sure to tune in to that. Also tonight, Bellator 72, the card has been finalised. Paul Daly and Rudy Bear's face-off, that was added. Daly obviously just recently signed with Bellator. And Carl Amuso versus Brian Baker in the welterweight tourney final as well. And that is actually live on SpikeTV.com to all our UK viewers. And we actually, I talked with Bjorn Rebney, CEO of Bellator, and he is actually currently working on trying to secure a deal with UK television networks to have this a regular occurrence. So we'll see what happens with that. And Mark, as well, obviously there's been a bit of news this week in the MMA world. Obviously, first of all, the TUF coaches, what do you make of that?
Well, people thought it was going to go a lot of different ways. I don't think anyone really saw it going. Big Country Roy Nelson versus Shane Carwin, mainly because of the fact that everyone thought that Dana White hates Roy Nelson.
Yeah, exactly.
He thinks he's a fat slob. He's a bearded. He's not. He's just a showman, you know. But Christ, I'm excited to see it. I want to see it. Like, I think Roy Nelson needs expansion. It's going to be good.
Yeah, and what do you make of Ross Pearson and George Sotiropoulos in TUF the clashes?
I would have gone a different way with the coaches, I think it could be good. It's going to give some exposure for some fighters who wouldn't be seen, and it's a concept. If they're going to bring this tough series around the world, this is the way to start anyway.
Yeah, they'll have to start somewhere. But I actually would have looked at Mark Hunt. I know it was Tala with Hawaii, but obviously he's out injured, so I think that was one of the major problems. And obviously, we had in this week as well, Jens Pulver and Andrei Arlovsky have both signed for ONE FC in Malaysia. Pretty interesting. And Andrei Arlovsky will go up against Soa the Hulk Pilelli, who's been, you know, going around Twitter these days at the moment. There's a big sort of campaign for himself to get back to the UFC. I think if he wins this fight, he fought on the UFC before against Eddie Sanchez. I think it was a loss. And, you know, he's trying to get back on in the UFC. And obviously, Ian McCall, we've been on the show today. He called out Luis Gadno during the week on MMAJunkie.com with Gorgeous George, who will also be on the show today. He called him out and actually, quote, "I definitely thought he sucked at 135, which was, you know, interesting stuff from Uncle Creepy. But actually, Ian has revealed to us in the interview, as you'll hear later on, he actually has a knee injury and will be out for 4 to 8 weeks, I think he stated. So he thought the injury would be a lot more severe than it was, but it's only a twist and not a tear, which is great news for Uncle Creepy fans. And we're Uncle Creepy fans, Mark.
Well, the knee might be gone, but the moustache is still good, you know. Could have yeah. It's always got to be working. Cool. But there's this UFC 149 card tomorrow night, isn't there? I'm getting excited about it, but I'm not sure how to feel about it. How do you feel?
I feel really excited for really one fight, and that's obviously Barão and Faber. And a lot of people, you know, are going with Barão, but I don't see it. I think he hasn't fought the quality of fighters. If you look on his wiki page and things like that, you can't get half the fighters up. Only the guys that he's fought in the UFC, and I think it's going to be a major step up and realization that, you know, he's in the big league tomorrow night when he faces off against Barão. And I can see Barão, you know, I don't think he's, as I just said there, I don't think he's fought at this level before. And I can see Faber giving him a lot of problems tomorrow. I know Barão's the favourite, but I just think, you know, Faber, I don't think he's fought anyone of this calibre. And I can see Uriah winning by submission, guillotine, choke.
That's a stance now. That's a stance. He's standing by it.
I'm going with it. I like the guy.
You're not getting the buzz about Hector Lombard versus Tim Boach?
I'm not. I don't buy into this buzz with Lombard. I think, you know, he hasn't fought the competition. And for people to say this guy, if he's a progressive win tomorrow, he's number one contender, is a joke in my eyes. It's Chris Weidman all the way. That was a fantastic performance last week. And, you know, you can't, I seriously think people are underestimating Tim Boach, because I said earlier, Tim Boach got his ass kicked for two fucking rounds against Yushin Okami and in Sydney, and Japan it was, and the most spectacular comeback I thought I've ever seen. I'd agree with Joe Rogan during his commentary that time. I know he retracted the comments and said it was Czech Congo, but it was incredible. The guy got his ass kicked, his face was a mess, and then comes back and just pure will, heart and spirit. I can see Boach causing an upset here tomorrow night.
Well, like, I think you're letting your favouritism towards Tim Boach colour your view of Hector Lombard, because I think Hector Lombard is an exciting prospect for the UFC, and the fact that they don't know what to expect from him. But that was my thing, is that when I looked at who was going to challenge Anderson Silva, I saw, well, it's going to be Weidman or it's going to be Lombard. It's going to be one of the two, whoever gets the most impressive win. And I'm not counting off Tim Boach. I know he can do it. But I thought it was going to be whichever one of those had the most impressive win, they were the number one contender, and that was what was going to be picked. But apparently some legacy fighter has another idea about this sort of stuff. So
yeah, well, I think Weidman is definitely the number one after such an incredible, you know, persistent and punishing performance against Mark Munoz. And actually, we should move on probably to Strikeforce. Again, as we said, Nate Marquardt, what a performance from Nate. He really, three beautiful elbows and two uppercuts to finish off Tyron T-Wood Woodley. You know, what a performance. That's the old Marquardt, you know, and I think he's back to his best. Obviously, there's not much competition in the welterweight division, but, you know, incredible performance, and I think he deserves a lot of praise and respect for that performance.
Now he's making his mark word again. It was a lesson in elbows. It was a really exciting fight, and I think a lot of people have underplayed. They've tried to kind of say that maybe Tyrone Woodley wasn't all he was cracked up to be, but Christ almighty, Nate Marquardt made us eat our words last week.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
It was a fantastic performance. He's an all-round fighter.
Nate Marquardt of old, I might add there. Obviously, we're not going to bore you, so let's get to our first interview of the day with Gorgeous George of MMAJunkie.com.
Delighted to say we're joined on the line by Gorgeous George of MMAJunkie.com.
George, it's been a big week in MMA. We've had UFC on Fuel for a card which, well, it wasn't, we weren't expecting much, but in Munoz Weidman, we had a fight which, well, Weidman really set his stall out and really challenged Anderson Silva. How did you feel it went down?
Yeah, exactly. You know, Munoz was the guy that I think was being pegged for a possible title shot versus Anderson Silva if he came away with the win. And if not, I think people were already starting to look towards Tim Boach versus Hector Lombard coming up tomorrow at UFC 149. And here comes Chris Weidman, kind of steals the show. Not only does he dispatch of Mark Munoz in stunning fashion, he was very impressive, and I think pretty much now put himself in the lead of that middleweight pack that has like 8 to 10 guys that are all chomping at the bit to get a piece of Anderson Silva. I think it's Weidman's fight based on off of these last few wins, but yeah, especially the Mark Munoz win.
Totally agree with you, George. Do you feel that Anderson Silva is disrespecting him in some way and not acknowledging this, and that UFC might not pay attention to this? Because Weidman has clearly set a stall out. He's clearly they might not see him as the sexiest fight card, you know, kind of, it might not be the biggest draw.
Right, exactly. And Anderson Silva's kind of earned a little bit of the right to pick and choose, or at least have a strong, you know, weigh in and a strong opinion on who we'd like to face. But he better come correct, because MMA fans are not stupid, yeah, and neither is the promotion. And so, now, I haven't seen any quotes attributed to him directly, but his camp, I think, recently said something like, you know, Lombard's not well known, he needs 2-3 more fights.
Yeah.
Weidman's not really well known, but boy, we'd like to fight Rockhold. And Rockhold's a tough guy, don't get me wrong. He's a world champion, and heck, how many times have we seen, have we ever wanted to see promotions, you know, fight champion versus champion? But it's just not really realistic. And if he's going to say that Weidman's not well known, well, he's got to be more well known than Rockhold, because he's fought in 3 main cards, and he just headlined, you know, a UFC on Fuel TV card for the UFC, while only 400,000 people saw the fight with on Showtime with Luke Rockhold. You know, he's a champion. He's defended the belt.
Yeah.
But I can't believe that he's more he's been seen more than Chris Weidman.
And do you think, as you said there, you believe it's not realistic, George? Is it completely unrealistic that fight wouldn't happen?
I don't know. I don't think it'll happen, because we know that the agreement they have there with, you know, Zuffa and Showtime, it's pretty strict. Mm. Otherwise, Gil Melendez would have came over last year when Dana White said he really, really wanted him. You guys remember that? Around the time of UFC 136 in Houston, he was talking about having Gilbert come over. He really, really thinks the world of Gilbert Melendez, and this guy, you know, he's well-known because he's fought in Japan. He's fought in Strikeforce for many years. He's got quality wins. He's on a streak. And they can't make that happen. So trust me, there's no way they're going to be able to make Luke Rockhold come over.
And speaking of Gilbert Melendez, George, Pat Healy had his 5th straight win in a row. Where does this put him in the picture for a title shot at Melendez's lightweight crown in Strikeforce?
Yeah, I think it puts him at the front as well. You know, that a win streak is a win streak. And his last loss was to the guy that just lost to Gilbert Melendez in Josh Thompson. So I think it's his shot. Everybody else has kind of had a crack. The only problem is, you know, it's going to be a tough sell, because Healy is that slow, methodical, grinding wrestler style that is not really appealing to the fans. But, hey, it's mixed martial arts. It's not always going to be, you know, a couple ninjas going out there and throwing, you know, Anthony Pettis-type kicks off the cage. And so Gilbert's going to have to deal with that. And I think Gilbert will do it. I just can't think of anybody else that's more deserving.
Yeah, definitely. I completely agree. He definitely deserves a title shot. We had him on the show actually last week, and he said if he won that fight, he thought he was in line for a shot. And just going back to the rest of the Fuel TV card, sorry, George, what was the general reaction to the card amongst the public in the States?
I think everybody liked it, because a lot always has to do with the way the card finishes. The co-main event, the main event. You know, you could have 8 decisions, but if the last 2 fights deliver, that's kind of what we remember the most. You know, that's what most of us put our stock in. That's what we're out there to see. And, you know, this fight card, in my opinion, came through. I'm easy to please. I like watching any mixed martial arts.
Yeah.
So, you know, you tap me on the shoulder and go, what do you think? I'm always going to have good things to say. But, you know, Weidman and Munoz at the top, You know, great fight, great performance by Weidman. I wish they could fight again just so we could see a little bit more out of Munoz.
Yeah.
I completely can't believe that Weidman's that much better. You know, he got himself off the canvas at the end of the first round, and then the second he got taken down, but then he got up. And all of a sudden, these guys squared off, and I thought, all right, this is Munoz's chance if he's going to do something, and he got clipped with the elbow. Well, if he didn't get clipped, what if that exchange had landed? You know, who would have got the best of it? I don't know, and I would kind of go back to that, but we can't. That's the sport that it is. You know, the guy had his chance. He misses. That's that. And then James Tahuna and Joey Beltran, how could you not get out of your seat for that one?
Yeah,
these guys went toe-to-toe, and Beltran showed a lot of heart because Tahuna looked like he was getting ready to take him out. And then all of a sudden, late in the third round, Tahuna starts to gas.
Yeah.
Beltran starts to make a run, but it was a little bit too late. So those fights were pretty cool, you know. So for me, I liked it. I thought T.J. Dillashaw also looked
awesome.
Really, really good. I thought Francis Carmon looked really good.
Yeah.
Alex Caceres. So top to bottom, I thought it was about like an 8 out of 10.
Definitely, I completely agree. Joey Beltran fight against James Tahuna. What a slobber knocker, as good old Jay Orr would say.
That first round was unbelievable. But George, moving on to the Strikeforce card, Rockhold versus Kennedy. That was a card where Strikeforce really threw everything against the wall. Nate Marquardt came back, and we said last week we weren't sure about what he was going to come back like after a year. But Christ almighty, he showed us in a way.
Think about it. 16 months off he was.
Yeah,
unbelievable.
And, you know, I'm a big believer in ring rust. We've done lots of, you know, of our own, you know, statistics and research, you know, here amongst the listeners. And we've gone like, you know, 500 fights deep to come up with a case study that shows that after 9 months, when you get two competitive fighters in there, 75% of the time, the guy coming off the 9 months or more, you know, time off is going to lose. He was 16 months off. And think about all the mental stress, you know, all the questions about TRT. I don't know if you guys get Spike Uncensored, but he was getting a little pissed off at the line of questioning. You know, he wanted to put that behind him. And in front of him, he had the undefeated Tyron Woodley, who, you know, sticks to his game plans. You know, he's a wrestler. He likes to take you down, make you suffer, and doesn't really deviate too much from the game plan, although he did in this fight, and maybe that cost him. So he knew that he had to be sharp that night. And, man, that's exactly how he looked.
Yeah.
I mean, he looked sharp. And he was very efficient with everything he did, and he weathered a couple of Tyron Woodley's early storms, and he came back and got that win. It was a huge win for him.
And where does Nate Marquardt go from here? Because obviously this, you know, the welterweight division, let's be honest about it, wouldn't be the best in Strikeforce. It's probably the second weakest division after the light heavyweight division. Where does he go here? I know he was talking about a possible super fight with GSP. He said he you know, if they're good friends, but if it came to push to shove, he'd fight him.
Again, the Strikeforce fighters have to stay with Showtime, so for us to entertain it, it'd be fun, you know, but it's just not going to happen. As much as we'd like to see it's just not reality. So you have to look at who Strikeforce has over there in the welterweight division, and there's a couple guys out there that I guess that I can think of. You know, Jordan Mean is coming off a win, and granted, right before that, he was coming off a loss, but you're not going to have these guys on huge winning streaks too often in Strikeforce. So one or two wins, if they look good, then, hey, you know what, it's time to dance. And the other guy, Jason High, who was in a dark match, he's now won 7 straight fights. And, you know, he's on a 7-fight win streak. So who knows, maybe they may want to slot him in there.
And how many people's Strikeforce at the moment, how many people's contracts are protected like that? Because it really seems to be the issue that some people are just in a middle land between, like, when people are coming out and complaining about the bonuses and this and that, is it a situation that Showtime should be fixing, or is it Strikeforce, the organization, who should be fixing, and Zuffa?
Well, you know, it's basically Strikeforce and Showtime that have to work together with that. It has nothing to do with Dana White.
Yeah.
It's two separate businesses. We have to look at it as two separate businesses. So I don't mind him giving it a shot. Why not? Maybe that'll put some pressure. And all they have to do is maybe come in with like $5,000-$10,000 a fight, like the WEC used to do. Maybe they can start there. You know, I mean, I'm sure the fighters would appreciate that. So for Lorenz Larkin to get down on his knees and give it a shot, I had no problem with it. Now let's wait and see if anything happens. I mean, some things have carried over. Like, for example, Zuffa had a summit not too recently. excuse me, recently, and they had not only UFC fighters there, but they had Strikeforce fighters there. When they enacted the insurance about a year ago, same thing. It wasn't just UFC. It was across the board for Strikeforce. Mm. So it seems like some things are able to carry over, some things they're not able to carry over. But, you know, in terms of bonuses, I don't know what's going to happen. We'll have to wait and see what the follow-up is with that.
And moving on to tomorrow night's card in UFC 149 in Calgary, how do you think Faber will fare against Barao?
Faber against Barao, that's a fight that I've gone back and forth on, and I finally made my decision, and I'm sticking with Barao on this, only because there's one thing that I always say here on MMA Junkie Radio, and I really believe, and this goes for all sports, I think speed kills, and, you know, when one guy can get in and get out quicker than the other guy, and the other guy's forced to make the adjustments, you know, that's huge. And as fast as Uriah Faber is, because he's fast, trust me, man, he gets in there, he's fast. I think once the game starts, once the fight starts, he slows down a little bit, as opposed to, like, when I see them hitting pads, there's not too many people that hit pads with the speed and ferocity that Uriah Faber does. But when he's fighting, it seems like he's a little bit off from where I see his warm-up, for example. And I think Barao's going to test those legs and, you know, take a little bit of Jose Aldo's game plan and implement it. He also has good knees off the standing position, or, you know, if he takes a couple steps and lands one of those, you know, so he's very proficient with his strikes, and I think that's going to be the difference. I think Faber may be able to get Barao down, but I think the ground game may get nullified because Barao's a Brazilian jiu-jitsu black belt. He's very athletic, so I think he can get the fight back to his feet. However, I will say, I've always been a big fan of Team Alpha Male and the way they attack the neck, and if he gets lazy and you know, we've seen Uriah Faber finish a lot of guys on the ground from the guillotine.
And staying with that, just with Barao, I know he's been incredibly impressive. Obviously, a 28 fight winning streak. Do you think some of the competition he's faced? You know, he's stepping into a whole new ball game against Uriah Faber, and Faber, you know, he's obviously a huge amount of experience. He's been in the title fights, etc. Do you think Faber maybe he hasn't faced the opponents of the quality of Faber?
Yeah, no, that's a good point. Faber even said he had one interesting quote. I had never really heard it. It was in a way, it was a little bit of trash talk, but it was subtle. And he said, "Hey, look, this guy won 28 straight, but tell me which one of those guys I wouldn't have beat."
Exactly. Yeah.
And he had a good point. If you looked at the record, you're like, okay, I see Faber in winning most of these and definitely competitive in all of them. So there is something to be said for that, but, you know, still, man, in mixed martial arts, to go 28, 29 fights without losing, I mean, that tells you that this guy comes in prepared, he's not lazy, his weight's dialed in, and he knows how to peak at the right time, because at some point or another, guys get caught slipping, and this guy's never gotten caught slipping.
George, this is obviously Henan Barao and Uriah Faber. They're fighting for their interim championship, and both fighters have come out and stated that they're going to be a fighting interim champion and aren't going to hold off for the big money fight. What's your stance on the Carlos Condit issue and interim titles, and should they be able to hold off and just wait for the money fight every time?
Yeah, that's a tough one, because... Okay, the injury to Dominic Cruz is very serious, and, you know, there's setbacks along the way. Sometimes we think, ACL tear, okay, he'll be back in 9 months.
And he made a ridiculous statement about being back in a ridiculously short amount of time. It's not going to happen.
Yeah, no, it's not going to happen. And so, you know, I see their point. If the last time Cruz defended, you know, it's going to be over a year by the time he defends, then maybe they should do something just in case there is a setback with Cruz and they don't hold up the whole division. But, you know, again, there's so much money at stake for title opportunities that I don't blame some of the guys for, you know, staying out 9-10 months if they have to wait out the title shot, because when you do get a title shot, I mean, that's basically a career changer, a life changer in terms of the money you can make.
And obviously, sticking with the card, obviously, it's going to be interesting to see how Hector Lombard gets on against Tim Bosch. Is there any other fights on the card that sort of, you know, stand out for you? Obviously, it's a hugely diminished card.
On the UFC 149 card?
Yeah.
Yeah, on the UFC 149 card, the ones I'm looking forward to the most would be obviously the top three with the interim belt at 135, Lombard and Boach. Congo and Jordan, only because I'm baffled why the odds makers have Jordan as the favorite.
I think
Chicago should be the favorite there.
Yeah, definitely.
I'm not saying a big favorite, but I think he should be the favorite. And I'm thinking, well, what am I missing here? Now, I'm not complaining because I'm here in Vegas, so I can legally walk up to the sportsbook here and make a bet, and I have, trust me.
Yeah.
But we'll see what happens, and maybe I'm wrong, you know. And then it'll be interesting to see Ebersol. You know,
yeah,
he's been on quite a roll, and if he can come in here and get a win, well, now he's got himself a 5-6 fight win streak. And that catches the eye of the matchmaker. Then he'll test them and put them in there against, you know, the contenders, or maybe he'll drop to 155, or who knows what he'll do. But I've become a big fan of that guy.
Yeah,
and,
definitely.
You know, Cormier McGee versus Nick Ring, I think those guys have a little bit of beef to settle from back from the reality show. So this is McGee's chance. They went two rounds. They gave the fight to Ring. A lot of people had it 1-1. So we may be looking at rounds 3, 4, and 5 here on Saturday. Luckily, it didn't go against Court McGee, so really the winner of this fight is the one that gets the real win and the real loss. So that one should be pretty cool. Francisco Rivera is from my neck of the woods. He's a fun, exciting fighter. He likes to lay it all out there. He's got an away game because Roland Delorme's a local guy there. And we'll see how it goes. You know, I like when guys, it's them against the world, and they go in there and they have to go into a hostile environment and get a W. And I don't just like that in MMA. I like that in all sports. I think that's cool. I think that's when you have to be your most composed and you have to execute, you know, to take away an away game from anyone.
And George, I suppose the phrase "card subject to change" is pretty relevant when it comes to UFC 149. And they've got four Canadians sprinkled around the card to kind of get the home fans kind of paying for blood. But do you feel that there's, like the Brazilian card, there's a possibility that people should be able to demand their money back or a refund for this?
Yeah, well, no, what I do know is that it's not going to happen. But
yeah.
It's weird that if it happened in Brazil, and I'm not even sure if that was ever confirmed or not, because so many things happen on Twitter and all these links that get thrown in front of my face, and I never know what's authentic and what isn't. But if it did, then yeah, I guess it would be nice if they would have had something. But they didn't. It is, you know, card is subject to change, and anything can happen, and I think what will happen is the UFC is just going to try and come back. You know, they've already committed to coming back to Calgary, and when they do, I think they're going to try and stack that card a little nicer for the second time around. But, I mean, they tried, you know. They had a lot of guys fall off, and they were moving some people around here and there. And
they'll win the Canadians back somehow.
they made an attempt. And if you think about it, okay, no disrespect to Eric Koch, but he's got his hands full against Jose Aldo.
Yeah, definitely.
And I'm not so sure that would have been as compelling of a matchup as Barral versus Faber. Barral versus Faber, man, you stop 100 people on the street and say, who do you like? It's going to be 50-50.
Yeah,
Aldo versus Koch, though, you're probably going to get 90-10. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to Faber and Barral. I think it's going to be a cracking fight.
Yeah, so in terms of the main event, it worked out for him, in my opinion.
Yeah, I completely agree. We were actually chatting to Chris Lieben earlier on, literally an hour ago, and Chris was saying, well, he wasn't saying necessarily calling Munoz out, but he said he'd possibly, on his return, maybe if the UFC would go with that fight, he'd jump all over. So what would you make of a Lieben-Munoz rematch?
Well, that would be a rematch of the 138 bout, right?
And, yeah.
In Birmingham.
I'm not all for rematches unless they make sense. And, I guess, what would be Chris's case, you know, for the rematch? I mean,
he basically said
he'd be 100% Chris Lieben to come back. And obviously, you know, he took the painkillers the night before of the fight.
His stance is that he defeated himself, really, in that fight.
Yeah. Well,
so you're not too pushed with that one now.
No, I'm not too crazy about it. I mean, if it happens down the road or something,
let's
maybe if both guys lose their next one, and now it's, you know, the stakes are a little bit higher because nobody wants to have a 3-fight losing streak. Then sure, you know, maybe they can build up the drama. But I like it when there's a little bit of drama in the matchups, you know, and if they have to go the road of getting a little nasty or whatever, then so be it. But right now, on paper, if I just look at those two, I'd say, hey, you guys already fought. You know, it's a fresh matchup.
And I believe, just moving on, I believe you have Cage Warriors on live on MMAJunkie.com tomorrow night. Are you looking forward to that? I heard your recent interview with Dublin's own Conor McGregor, and what did you make of him also?
Well, the most recent one we had was Pat Holahan, but yeah, we have had Conor McGregor, and I love having the Irish guys on. Those guys they have some really, really good smack talk combined with, I guess, just the lingo, you know, the way
the banter,
people talk and banter. Banter is a perfect word. Thank you for saying that.
No problem.
And so I just really get a kick out of it. And both guys brought it. Both guys seemed like they were really, really pumped up. So I definitely want to see how Paddy holds up there. He's 8-0-1.
Yeah.
And I'm hearing Ireland really, really starting to build up their MMA scene. So mm-hmm. I'm an international guy, man. I want to see the best fighters at Bellator and Strikeforce and the UFC from all over the world, just to see really, really who are the baddest fighters out there. You know what I mean? And I want to also chime in on one thing. Going back about 10 minutes, it kept sitting in my head, and I wanted to come up with the right time to say something. But I don't want you guys to forget about Kazuo Misaki, who also dropped to 170 as a possible name for Nate Marquardt. When you guys asked me, and I
definitely.
Mian or whatever was a good one, or Jason High, I knew there was another one. Yeah. I couldn't remember who, and,
no
and
worries.
It popped in my head. Kazuo Misaki.
No worries. And sticking just with Conor McGregor, obviously it was a very impressive performance last time actually in Dublin, where he actually won the lightweight belt. If he wins this this fight that's scheduled for September 1st, I beg your pardon, do you think Dana White might, or Joe Silva might, come knocking on his door to sign him up for the UFC?
I think so, because this guy's got personality, he's got skills, he really, really looks like an athlete in there, really, really explosive, and you know, his motor's always going, he's always going forward. So I think with the way the UFC has committed themselves to Europe, to the UK, you know, and really, I guess, all of the world, they're going to need more international fighters, and I think he'd be a perfect one. I think he's got a little bit of Michael Bisping in him, where he can really, really talk up a good game and back it up. So what you know, what they don't want to do is start losing guys to other promotions as well, and you've seen Bellator does a good job of recruiting guys from Eastern Europe, from Europe, from South America, and they're not afraid to pull the trigger on signing some of those international prospects. So I think they definitely have to stay wise to this and see who's out there and who makes sense. And I think Conor McGregor definitely fits the bill there.
Definitely, I completely agree. It was a very impressive performance last time out when he lifted the lightweight title in Cage Warriors. Sorry, I forgot for a sec.
Yeah, Cage Warriors 47, he beat Dave Hill.
That's right, Dave Hill in Dublin. Obviously, Bellator, as you mentioned there, Paul Daly's obviously on the card. They signed him up. He's facing Rudy Bears tonight. And how do you think the welterweight tournament final will go there tonight in Bellator?
Man, that's a tough one with Carl Amistou and Brian Baker. Brian Baker, if his nickname wasn't the Beast, I'd be telling you, man, that guy's a beast, because that's exactly what he is.
Yeah.
And he's just a tough matchup for anybody. Amistou's the underdog, and Brian Baker is the favorite. If you put a gun to my head and said, if you don't get it right, we're pulling the trigger, then I'd have to go with Baker. But something tells me, man, that Amistou might be up there ready to get the upset. You know, the nickname that he has, Psycho, it's perfect for him because he's so intense out there, and I really think he's one of those guys like Hector Lombard where he kind of already wins the first battle before they even start the fight, you know, with the intimidation factor and all that, and who knows? Brian Baker's he's a veteran. He's been around the sport for a long time, so he may not even care, but something smells like an upset to me tonight with Carl Amistou pulling off the W.
Okay. Just one more question before we wrap it up, George, and we appreciate your time. Sticking with, you just mentioned there, Hector Lombard, are you impressed with him, or do you think he's talked up, or obviously we're going to see tomorrow night? What's your opinion of him, basically?
No, I think he's awesome. I think he's a great fighter. I think he belongs in the UFC for sure. And now we'll just see if he can maintain that type of streak, fighting difficult competition every single time, because every matchup in the UFC is pretty difficult. And they've already thrown him in there against the top guys. So from here on out, that's the way it's going to be. You know, he's a huge favorite here in Vegas, and I think he's going to win the bout because he's got power, he's got speed, definitely has experience. so I expect his hand to be raised. But does that still mean that he can make it all the way to a shot versus Anderson Silva? Man, that's the tough part. And right now, I'd have to say I need to see more out of him against this higher competition. But I don't know, guys. I mean, there's tough fighters here in the UFC. You know, Munoz, Weidman, Sonnen, Vitor, Belcher, and he's probably going to have to beat like two or three of those guys to get a shot at Anderson. Yeah. So,
what does he have to do
that's a rough road.
What does he have to do to outstyle Weidman's win over Munoz? Because, you know, he really proved something in that. And does he just have to win more impressively, or just first round knockout? Or
well, I think I think Tim Bosch has been overlooked in this fight, because he had a serious impressive comeback against Yushin Akami. Was that last time out for Tim Bosch? It was. That was incredible.
Yeah, UFC 144.
That was an incredible comeback. The guy was getting his ass kicked for two rounds and comes back in the third round and unbelievable. As Joe Rogan went over the top, obviously, in the commentary, the best comeback ever. But, you know, I think Bosch is a tough dude.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And he's got one move that I really like, the front kick that he uses, and he uses it a lot. That can stifle a guy from coming forward. You know, a lot of guys use the jab, but the front kick, it can be a weapon as well, and he throws it out there as good as anyone. You know, he's got heavy hands, but Lombard's a nut. You know, he doesn't care. He's always going to come forward because he thinks that no matter what you throw, he can take it, and you can't take enough of his stuff without going down. So, you know, we'll have to see. You know, Boach cannot take his time like he did with Okami. He really has to be on for the whole fight. Otherwise, he's going to get laid out, because Lombard throws hard with both hands, with reckless abandon, and I think he knows that if he can go out there and make a statement, even if he doesn't get a championship bout out of this, you know, out of a win from this fight, maybe he can from the next one, because a lot of people are really, really excited about him. He's a world champion in a couple different organizations, and I think they're paying him good money to come over from Bellator, so I think they're throwing him into the fire right away. But, you know what? I didn't answer one of the questions, and that was, what does he need to do? I'll tell you what he needs to do. He needs to fight. What he should have done was, he needs to shove Tim Boach today at the weigh-ins and really get everybody talking about it. And then tomorrow he needs to get in there and not shake hands when it's time to shake hands. You know, when the referee says you may touch hands, he probably needs to dog him there and get everybody to go, ooh, and tweet about it.
Yeah,
and go
on
nuts.
Twitter, yeah.
Then he needs to go out there and go crazy. But at some point, just like Gray Maynard did to Clay Guida, he needs to antagonize him and go ahead, take a shot. And when he takes one of Boach's shots, if he can take it and survive and still come back and finish Boach, I think we'll all be going, did you see that? That was crazy, man. You know, it'll get us all talking. And then he may be able to supersede Chris Weidman. But he's really just going to have to steal the show, is what I'm saying.
I completely agree.
You know, I don't know.
Definitely.
George, listen, absolutely, it's been gorgeous.
It's been gorgeous.
And listen, mate, thanks a million for coming on. And everyone check out MMAJunkie.com, an absolute top website. And appreciate your time as always, mate. Cheers.
Thank you. Anytime you guys need me, holla. You're
cheers, right, brother. Sir. Thanks, mate.
Thank you.
This is the Crippler Chris Levin, and you're listening to Talking Brawls.
And that was gorgeous, George of MMAJunkie.com. Thanks a million to George for coming on the show. Speaking of MMAJunkie.com, they're showing Cage Warriors 48 tomorrow night live on their website from the HMV Forum in London. And headlining that card is Fasel Hunshin versus John Phillips. Great card. You should check it out on MMAJunkie.com and see the guys from Cage Warriors. And still sticking with Cage Warriors, Conor McGregor, Dublin's own, obviously lifted the Cage Warriors lightweight title. Sorry about that, it was actually featherweight. And Conor picked that up last month at Cage Warriors 47 right here in Dublin, Ireland. And Conor is rumoured, as George said, to be getting a UFC contract if he wins his next fight in August. What do you make of Conor McGregor, Mark?
Well, it's exciting. It's exciting to see someone coming from Ireland, the first person actually championing the sport. And when I feel that when he gets into the UFC, and I feel like a contract's looming, I feel like Dana's taking notice. I feel like if he can get into the UFC, I really think people are going to start caring about the sport here properly and seeing it as a mainstream sport.
Exactly. I completely agree with you, Conor. You know, he's one of these guys, as George said there, like if you've watched his weigh-in with Dave Hill. It was incredible. They were both face to face, pushing each other around. It was really, you know, exciting stuff. And he likes to talk himself up as well, which, you know, it'd be great to promote the sport here. And moving on, earlier today we caught up with Chris the Crippler Lieben of the UFC middleweight division, and you know, we had a great chat with Chris. So here's what he had to say. Cheers.
First of all, Chris, thanks a million for joining us on Talking Brawls. I know you've been down with the flu, and I appreciate your time.
Well, Chris, you spoke...
Right on, thanks for having me.
Chris, you spoke back in May in an interview with Ariel Helwani on the MMA Air of your journey back from the events at UFC 138 in Birmingham. It's been almost 3 months. How have you been?
I've been really, really, really good, actually. Just, you know, been training hard, you know, focusing on my recovery, and then... you know, I've even started, you know, doing some stuff to give back a little bit. I'm volunteering now, working at the youth prison here in Hawaii, working with the kids there. So actually, life's been really, really good.
Cool. And sure. Looking back on it, not to dwell on it, but what was the hardest part of the experience in Birmingham? Was it the travel and the cut, or was it being in the spotlight with so many main event media commitments when you were out of your comfort zone and a long way from home?
You know, I don't know. I think it was more, I had some issues with my camp at the time that were really kind of weighing on me a little bit.
Yeah.
And Chris, have you made any changes? You just mentioned there you had issues with your camp. Have you made any changes to your training routine and camp since the suspension?
Yeah, I have, actually. You know, everybody was really, really great. Everybody in my camp was great and wonderful. We just didn't seem to work together as a unit the best, you know, so... So I kind of had to switch things up, you know, and I mean, you know, no hard feelings. I still love everybody that I work with, but you know, camp was definitely causing some extra stressors that, you know,
yeah,
just proved real heavy on me. Obviously, I handled those pressures wrong, but now going into the, you know, hopefully looking forward to getting a fight soon. Yeah, I've definitely changed things up.
And who are you exactly working with at the moment?
Well, right now I work with my boxing coach, Coach Joe Kim, and then another gentleman named Chris West is going to be heading up my coaching. And then I have Brandon Akamine, who's a strength and conditioning coach here in Hawaii, focusing on my strength and conditioning. So the camp is dialed in. You know, I've had a lot of time, so... Everything is, you know, pretty much just set up. We're just kind of chomping at the bit, waiting for that call from Mr. Silva, you know, give me an opponent so I can get to work.
Any exclusive news on an opponent or any time you might be back?
I'm hoping, you know, I'm eligible in about 12 weeks, maybe just over that. So early mid-November, you know, so, I mean, it seems like that's right about where they're at as far as booking fights goes. So, you know, I know he's booked October already, so it'd be nice to get that call, you know. Of course, you know, the matter isn't in my hands. It's up to Joe, you know, and what he thinks is best, you know, but I'd like to fight, you know, sooner than later.
And Chris, with the new camp and all the things you've been working on, when that octagon door closes and Buffer screams out Chris the Crippler Lieben again, what sort of a fighter can the fans expect?
You know, a hungry one, that's for sure. You know, I definitely, you know, I'm coming out, you know, a year or not, I'm still coming off a loss. You know, I need to go in there and... you know, demonstrate, show my abilities, you know, and I'm definitely, you know, I'm in better shape now than I have been for a lot of my fights when I'm better shape today than I was, you know, competing at for several other fights. You know, just so much has changed with me, you know. I think it's going to reflect substantially inside the cage. You know, I've changed so much. I mean, I'm pretty much, you know, I'm 100% sober nowadays, and so, you know, that really reflects in my diet and then also in my ability to train more. You know, training has pretty much been my my replacement drug. You know, that's what I do is I just go into the gym and I work out and I coach and I train all day till I'm dead tired and I go home and pass out.
I was about to say that. What do you think 100% clean and sober Chris Lieben is capable of?
You know, I don't know. I mean, honestly, I really don't know. You know, it's never, I've never felt this way before in my life. You know, I've ironed out a lot of, you know, I've done a substantial amount of counseling and personal work, and, you know, so it's going to be interesting to see. You know, I've kind of told people, you know, I'd like to showcase my ground game, you know, a little bit more, you know, in the past, and then it doesn't happen, you know, but, you know, definitely I've been focusing on my wrestling, you know, so as to get people to the ground where my ground game is solid, you know, I know I can knock them out. I know they're already worried about that. You know, now I'd like to, you know, just, you know, for me and then, you know, for the future, I'd like to have people respect my ground game a little more than they do. You know, everybody says, oh, Chris Lieben, he's just he's a striker. Well, I'd like to show that, you know, I've got the ground part of the game as well.
And Chris, obviously, as you said there, you're training till you drop in the evening time. How exciting is that? Is it? It's obviously a fresh beginning and a new start. Is it like your debut all over again?
Yeah, it really is. It really is. You know, I feel like it's a rebirth. You know, so you know that being said, you know, I feel like I've got to go out, reestablish myself, and you know, I mean, everything is starting fresh. I don't feel like I'm standing on this pile of past victories or losses. I feel like this is a whole new fighter. You know, getting ready to come and step into the big game.
Is this really the first proper break you've had in your career and the first time to reflect? Do you think you almost needed this to come back fresh and a new fighter?
I do. I really, really do. You know, honestly, you know, I'd run into some troubles, you know, partially, you know, just overtraining and then, you know, trying to just medicate through the pain and that kind of, you know, changing into more of a dependency. You know, now I've been able to, you know, let the body heal, kind of, you know, assess what needs work, you know, and I've been doing the right things, you know, as far as, you know, working on, you know, flexibility, working on, you know, going in and getting massage, acupuncture, seeing the chiropractor, you know, and then changing my diet, finding out what works for me and my diet, you know, in order to carry on. And, you know, I find that the natural methods actually work better, you know, also have a lot lighter repercussions too. So.
No, cool. Absolutely.
Brilliant. Chris, what sort of weight are you walking around at the moment? And how much would you have to cut when you return to the octagon?
Well, you know, actually, it's kind of interesting. My weight has been, right now, I'm about 208, 210. I was as light as 202, 203 when I had to travel a little bit. I had to go visit home and then go down to Las Vegas for the UFC Summit, and I managed to squeeze on a couple pounds. But all in all, you know, in the off season, I used to get up to about 230. So I'm walking around almost 20 pounds lighter than normal.
Brilliant. And obviously it's been an extremely turbulent period in your life since Birmingham. Who's been the biggest help in your life, and have you had to change people you sort of associate yourself with?
Well, you know, as far as the people I associate myself with, yeah. You know, kind of across the board, I've found that, you know, I'm not quite as popular of a guy as I thought I was. I had a lot of friends that are kind of, you know, they're kind of the Klingons. You know, Dana White was talking about them, and you know, they're kind of a real deal. You know, thing you think they're your buddies, but then you know when you're up there with you, when you're down, they scatter like a light cockroaches. You know. Some of those. I also had some good friends, but you know they've got their share of problems, and you know they're pretty understanding that you know right now I really can't be around them. And even that being said, you know, even just some good friends, you know, I've chosen to remove myself you know, from 99% of all the social settings that I used to be in. You know, I really just kind of had to, you know, a little bit of isolation, but, you know, in the right ways, you know, just, you know, basically my home is the gym, and then I come home to my house. There's no going out. You know, I kind of stay away from the friendly barbecues where everybody's drinking and everything else, you know. So, I mean, from that standpoint, it's been a little tough, but, you know, my wife hasn't had a drink since I've been through this whole thing, and she's been right there with me. So she's definitely, you know, been a huge support. And not to mention, you know, there's a lot of people that have been through what I'm going through in Hawaii that train at my gym and that are around that have been there for me to reach out to. So, you know, really actually just having a really good support group.
Brilliant. I admire your honesty. It must be very difficult to go through that.
And has the USC, obviously, they got you hooked up at rehab and everything. Have they been good to you since then, staying in contact? Obviously, Joe Silva is going to be banging down the door pretty soon when the suspension's coming up.
Yeah, well, you know, a little bit. You know, I mean, you know, sometimes obviously they retweet some of my Twitters about some of the stuff I'm going through. You know, I've sent Joe Silva, you know, a couple of texts to let him know I'm doing good. You know, the UFC, you know, just really been amazing. You know, I never would have guessed that you know they would have been so understanding, you know, and really really helped me out. But you know, I think, you know, it was. You know, it was Dana, Joe, and the Fatitas, and, you know, and they sat down and they, you know, I know that they had a talk before they sent me to rehab, and they, you know, I'm really, really glad that, you know, that I'm really glad I got suspended and that I had that they provided me with the opportunity to send me to help, you know, help straighten out my life. And, you know, I feel like now, you know, hopefully the time is coming when I can, you know, repay them. You know, and that's in the cage. Go out and have some great fights, you know, and show them that, you know, they really helped me out.
Sorry, has anyone given you any advice that has possibly gone through the same situation that you're going through at the moment?
Yeah. I mean, you know, again, you know, probably not. Probably, you know, kind of the anonymous type guys, you know, that, you know, probably wouldn't want me to give them the shout out on the radio. But absolutely, I've got some people that you know, that I reach out to that have been through similar or even, you know, even bigger deals than what I've gone through, you know. And so, you know, it's really good, really important for me to have somebody to be able to relate to.
Excellent.
And have you been paying attention to everything that's going on? Are you still obsessed with MMA? Are you still a fan? Do you find yourself watching tapes when you're off, or do you need to separate, remove?
You know, I would definitely categorize myself as a student, not necessarily as a fan. Yeah. And I don't think I've ever really been a fan. And what I mean by that is, you know, there's a lot of students that can walk into my gym and tell me more of these lighter, you know, the fighters that are in the lighter weight divisions and what went on Tuesday. You know, I definitely have certain guys that I like, and I definitely want to catch them fighting. You know, I'm always on YouTube trying to find, you know, checking out the new move. I'm doing that kind of stuff. You know, I'm always training, calling my buddies, going, hey, you know, I got this new way of finishing the darts. You got to check this out, you know, or this new little trick from half guard. And, you know, I'm more of a doer, you know what I mean? So
yeah.
So I really love being in the gym, working and you know, progressing my skills, definitely more so than, you know, than following, you know, who got arrested this week and who got married, you know, and all that. That also entails our support, all that stuff.
And Chris, has that always been the case? Have you always been a student and always wanted to teach and train people? Has that always been one of your main interests and loves of just martial arts? And is that where you see yourself in 10 years' time?
Absolutely. You know, I started coaching. I hadn't even been training that long. I started coaching at Team Quest when I had only been training there for about a year.
Gosh.
And really, I believe, you know, I'm a good fighter. but I really feel like I'm a great coach, and I really love to coach. You know, for some reason, you know, getting younger kids, you know, getting a kid that's, you know, I don't know, 16 to 20, and you know, their life's kind of rough. They got a few extra pounds, you know, and they come in, they lose weight. They end up staying in school. They get a girlfriend. They get self-confidence. And now they don't have to fight to prove that they're tough anymore. You know, that kind of stuff is rewarding to me. You know, and in particular, I don't have a lot that I can give. For example, you know, with me having the opportunity to be able to go and work with the kids that are incarcerated, you know, I teach them Muay Thai for about 2 hours, you know, and then I sit down and we have a talk. We have a group discussion afterward. You know, and those kids, you know, they get a ton out of it. You know, they love to see me when I come in, you know, and they can see that, you know, hey, you know, this guy, he's been through a lot of similar situations, and you know, his life even right now isn't that easy. But look at what he's done. Look what he's made of himself. You know, so you know that I truly believe that you know I have no desire to go back to school to be a doctor or a lawyer or anything like that. You know, my place in this lifetime is on the mat, you know, helping people out. And that's where I enjoy spending my time and where I really want
to
be.
Excellent, Chris. Chris, getting back to your return, and being a fighter, you know, top fighters always have someone on their mind. Who does Chris Lieben want to see next in the octagon?
That's an interesting question. I mean, you know, obviously a lot has happened, you know, since I fought last. You know, a lot of my students that are, you know, as we call them, fans of the sport, really would like to see me fight Hector Lombard. You know, apparently they think that would be a really good fight. You know, as far as I'm concerned, you know, I'm really not interested in revenge or going and riding my losses. You know, to me, you know, the only person that's really beat me is me. And you know, maybe that's how you have to look at it as a fighter. But you know, I really look at it as, you know, the choices that I made are really what caused me my losses. You know, and right now I'm just looking to make the right choices and get in there and reestablish myself.
Would you like to see Mark Munoz again? In a better,
you know,
frame of mind.
That's exactly the case I'm talking about. You know, if of course the UFC deemed it necessary, and you know, do I think, you know, that 100% Chris Lieben to be Mark Munoz? You know, I can't say, you know, because I don't want to take anything away from the guy. The guy, you know, he beat me hands down. You know, and he's an amazing fighter. You know, of course, if Joe Silva threw that one on the plate, I wouldn't turn it down.
Yeah, that'll be a great one to see 100% Chris Lieben back in action and kick some ass. But have you anything else there, Mark? You want to add with Chris?
Well, I did want to know what colour the hair was going to be the next time you step in the octagon as well.
What?
Well, you know, if it's not red, I get hate mail. I remember when I fought Michael Bisping. Well, that's why you lost your hair. It was black. It was red. And, you know, and it's...
Chris,
and I go, man, you know, I'm 32 years old now. You know, it's like, you know, I started doing it when I was 22.
I started
dyeing my hair red, you know, just so people could recognize me. Well, pretty sure they know who I am now.
You should dye green.
But, you know, the fans like it, you know, and, you know, I believe that, you know, as fighters, we're not only athletes, we're entertainers, so... Probably going to continue to keep it red.
Okay, fair enough. Chris, have you a message for your fans over this side of the pond, or your fans worldwide in general?
Do I have a message for them?
For your fans, yeah.
Yeah, you know, man, you know, well, I just really want to, you know, thank everybody that, you know, I get a lot of Facebook and Twitters, you know, hey, you know, keep your head up. A lot of people that are, you know, been real supportive, and you know, a lot of people that have sent me messages, you know, that regarding, you know, my situation, you know, saying, you know, that, hey, seeing that, you know, I can turn things around, you know, and some of my fans that, you know, follow my Facebook and Twitter a lot closer, you know, always saying, hey, look how good you're doing, you know, you've really provided me with inspiration, you know, it's things like that, being able to see that really, you know, give me that spirit and that will to continue.
Chris.
So, you know, I just want to thank them for being behind me, and you know, let them know that you know, I will be back in there and not going to let them down.
Brilliant stuff. Listen, Chris, it's been absolutely fantastic to talk to you, and I hope everything, the recovery, everything, the rehabilitation, goes fantastic, and I appreciate you being so honest with us, Chris.
Awesome. Thanks, guys. I appreciate
Thanks for being
on.
So honest, Chris. Thanks for hearing so well.
Right on. Thank you.
Thanks a million again to Chris for catching up with us earlier on. Absolute gentleman, and we hope everything goes well for Chris in the future, and he's a great return to the UFC. Mark, how did you enjoy the interview?
What a legend. Candid, to say the least.
Yeah, and as well, especially, we'd like to thank Chris as well, because he obviously had the flu the last few days, and to come on and be so open and honest.
He's a fighter.
You have to respect a guy like that, and obviously, again, as we said, the best of luck to Chris. And also, obviously, we caught up with Ian Uncle Creepy McCall, the man with the wonderful moustache, we must say. And, you know, Ian obviously lost his rematch with Demetrius Johnson on a points decision, and was very disappointed. And this week he actually called out, last week it was with Gorgeous George, as we had on earlier, he called out Louis Gatineau, and he wanted to get on the Fox card in LA in the Staples Center, because it's 30 minutes from his house, and he said that Luis Gatineau, I thought he sucked, quote, at 135. And obviously Luis has now dropped down to 125, and Luis, I think, has been calling him out. So without further ado, we'll get straight into the Ian McCall interview. Take it away, Mark.
All right, Ian, great for you to join us on Talking Brawls again. Starting with the Demetrius Johnson fight, how upset were you after the fight? Because you had obviously very high expectations going into the fight.
I was you know, pretty disappointed in myself, because you know, I didn't perform like I should have. I had with that, you know, obviously completely my own fault. My diet didn't go as planned. My weight cut was huge. I cut like 18.8 pounds. In the last like 24 hours. So, you know, and that sort of stuff is no one, you know, you can't play the blame game. Well, that kind of stuff, you know, it just comes down to me. You know, I'm the one who put food in my body. I'm the one that should have had my weight more in check, you know?
Yeah. And, I know you stated, it was the hardest weight cut you ever had to make. Can you elaborate on that?
Yeah, you know, I for some reason my body was just holding on to the weight more than usual. So, like when I fought in Australia, I cut 13 pounds in the last like 24 hours, which was easy. It came off super easy.
Yeah.
In Florida, I ended up cutting 18.8, and it really sucks. You know, I felt it in the third round a lot. You know, I slowed down a bunch, and I just didn't fight like me, so.
Yeah.
And, Ian, if it came to it in the future, would you, as King of Uncle Creepy, would you lose the mustache for a weight cut?
No.
And Ian, obviously moving on to, on MMAJunkie.com with Gorgeous George, he stated that, about Luis Gatineau, you definitely thought he sucked. What about Jussie Adesilva? Would you have any interest in possibly fighting him again now that he's on the UFC roster?
Well, Gatineau's been calling me out a bunch, so I would like to fight. You know, I don't want to say I talk shit on him, yeah. But I just kind of call it like I saw it. You know, he kind of sucked. At 135. You know, he looked like shit on the show. Yeah. And, you know, but he's looked a lot better at 125 than he did at 135. So I would love to fight him, you know. I don't quite think he's on my level yet, so I think it'd be fun I could have my way with him. but with Jussie Adesilva, yeah. I'm happy that he got signed. The kid deserves it completely, you know. He's really tough. I'm the only person to beat him, you know. He's only gotten better. I think he's going to be a good add to the flyweight division. And, yeah. And I would, you know, people keep asking me if I want to fight him again. And sure, but if I fight him, I want to fight him in Brazil. You know, he got the fight.
Yeah, fair enough.
The first fight was, you know, kind of on my home turf, so let the second one be on his home turf.
So you're looking at facing Gardner. That's what you want.
Oh, I don't care. I'll fight anybody. I know Gardner has a fight. So, really, at this point, you know, I was supposed to fight on the August 4th card at Staples Center because yeah. It's my home area, but I injured my knee, so I'm not.
All right. Okay.
I had to pull out of that one. Now I'm just looking to heal up and get back in as soon as possible. I don't really care how I fight.
And how's the knee? What's the exact diagnosis on the injury?
We thought we ruptured it, but it's just a sprain. It's just a
good stuff.
LCL sprain that, you know, it's a lot less than we were expecting. We thought that I for sure tore something, but thank God it's just a sprain.
Great stuff. And how long are you out of action for? Training, etc.
You know, I can still do some stuff. You know, just a lot of rehab, and I can still swim. I can still, you know, maybe hit pads and stuff and box. But I'll be out for like 4 to 6 weeks.
Okay, so when will the next possible time we'll see you in the octagon again, Ian?
Oh, I would have no idea. It'd probably be let's say it takes, you know, 4 more weeks for it to heal up. And then maybe give me another 8 weeks to fight, so maybe 2 or 3 months.
Okay.
Ian, do you ever find there's an internal struggle between the Uncle Creepy showman, the guy who wants to entertain your fans, your legions of fans, and Ian McCall, the mixed martial artist, who just wants to put an X in the win column?
yeah, you know, there is. There's definitely I've got an inner struggle with a lot of pieces in my brain, not just with just the entertainment side. You know, I've got my daily struggles for a lot of stuff. But yeah, you know, at this point, I just have to start getting some wins in the win column because I've done enough entertaining so far. You know, I put 2 good fights on; that'll be entertaining. No, I just got to go out. Yeah, no matter what I say, I'm always going to do the entertainment part. That's my job.
Well, especially...
But I really just got to hurt some people.
Well, especially going back to the... When you were in your first fight with Demetrius, you had him in complete control. And do you feel like you let him off lightly? And you just wanted to go out there and show the fans what you were made of?
Yeah, I kind of screwed up that one.
But you won that
you
first
know,
fight.
You won just, yeah, you really can't. I mean, look at the two that he used in the Forrest Griffin fight. I mean, Tito took him down in what every round and dropped him in 2 of them, and he got screwed. I mean, and I mean, just to boot, it was the guy's final fight, and then Forrest acts like a huge douchebag, and you know, does the whole interview thing, and you know, runs out of the ring, you know, like a baby. It's just the whole like you can't. You can't let the judges take you know get your fight because no matter who you are or you know at what point in your career you're at you can still get screwed pretty bad.
And Ian, there's a card in Nottingham, and I know you've a lot of fans over this side of the pond in the UK and the Republic of Ireland. Is there any possibility you might try and get on the Nottingham card?
I would love to fight England. I mean, I haven't gotten any word. The last time I was out in England was for UFC at the O2 Arena. Chuck was supposed to fight Rashad, and we all planned like a, you know, 1 month trip out to Europe, and he ended up getting injured. But we still went out there and, you know, had fun. But I would love to fight in Europe, in England. I mean, especially. You know, you guys are always fun people. I always have a good time. So
yeah, we want you to come to Dublin anyway. It'd be a bit of crack having a character like you around the place. And getting to the flyweight tournament final, Johnson versus Benavidez. Who takes that down in?
I obviously want DJ to win because it'll make me look better. you know. But I think Joe's going to win. I think Joe's going to employ the same type of strategy I had in the first fight, and he'll get the job done. I think. I mean, can DJ win? Of course he can. He just has to stay away. He did a good job of it against me, so you know, he has to just not let Joe get his hands on him.
And obviously, you've been injured recently. How was the camp and how's everything going at Oyama Gym with Colin Oyama and Shane Del Rosario and the guys there?
Yeah. We've got, you know, we've got a lot of new people coming in, some new flyweights that are, you know, really building our team. And I think within the next year or two, we're going to have a huge, huge, strong team. I mean, we're going to have another handful of people in UFC and a lot more notoriety of the gym.
Yeah, and in the UFC, the lightweight division, how do you think that's building up the fighters they've been acquiring? Are you impressed, or what's your opinion on that?
Oh, yeah, I think that Tim Elliott made John Dodson look bad.
Look bad?
Where, you know, he just does it. and he's, you know, like doing cartwheels and stuff, and I think it frustrated Dodson.
Yeah.
You know, and made Dodson not perform like he should have. But you know, when someone's throwing weird stuff at you like that, I mean, if they actually catch you, that's pretty embarrassing. So, you know, I get why he didn't engage him completely. You know,
do those type of guys, characters, get underneath your skin? Do they irritate you?
What?
Do these type of characters get underneath your skin and irritate you? Would you like to meet them in the octagon someday?
Oh, sure. You know, I hopefully can get back in there. I'd like to fight twice before the end of the year. You know, yeah. Just stay busy and then and you know, hopefully earn either with those two fights or maybe one more. You know, earn a title shot and get back in. You know, get back to what's rightfully mine and start defending it and beating everybody else up.
And do you feel that the lighter weight classes are now proving that they can sell the UFC to the Fox viewers, to the general public? You're putting on exciting fights for everyone who, the layman and the person who doesn't understand mixed martial arts is going to go, fuck, that's a good fight every time.
Yeah.
And the heavier weights, they might not get the intricacies, but Christ. Ian, I was just saying that, do you think that your weight class is now starting to prove it's worth the UFC and prove exactly to the Fox viewers and show what the lighter weights can do to the people who might not get UFC and mixed martial arts at first?
Yeah, I think that we're showing the evolution of the sport better than heavier weights, you know?
Yeah.
I think just because we're technically more sound and we're able to fight with better technique because we don't get tired. Like, me saying I got tired in the third round, I still had I still put out more energy than people put out in the first round, you know? So, I think that to the average person, we're just kind of showing them what it should, what proper MMA should be.
Exactly.
I think you guys should be put on on bigger cards. Definitely 100%. And Ian, let's hope we're going to try and get you on. Would you like to get on the Nottingham card? Any chance that we've already mentioned it, but that's one we'd like to see on anyway, because we're making the trip across to Nottingham for the card.
Yeah, and I'd be stoked for that.
Yeah, we'd love to see you on that, because we're going over this set. But listening, thanks again for your time. You're an absolute gentleman. I'm one of the honest guys in the UFC, and I hope everything goes great for you, and I hope to talk to you again soon. Thanks a million, Ian.
Anytime, thank you guys.
Niall, I must ask you a question.
For Christ's sake.
Is it Gadanow or De Silva?
You know, I would like to see the rematch with Jiu-Jitsu De Silva, because, you know, obviously he beat him before in Saki Palace when he was there. And I think it's a better fight for the fans. And, you know, I think Gadanow does have a lot to prove. And it's the one I really want to see. So let's hope it happens, you know.
It's amazing when you look at that division that everyone has so much history with each other. And I think that the UFC is only starting to realise what they have. They have about four or five fighters there who all know each other incredibly well. But there's some matches to be made.
Yeah. And as well, you know, Ian as well, like he as he said there, like John Dodson, the whole thing with that. And he was mouthing off again. He doesn't like, you know, the cocky sort of guys, which is, you know, it's pretty interesting. And, you know, there's a lot of guys obviously dropping down from 135 to 125. And, you know, I think it's going to be a really exciting division. And obviously, you know, I'd love to see Ian get on the UFC Nottingham card in the Capital FM Arena in Nottingham in September. And I think tickets are still available for that, Mark. And you can go to the Capital FM Arena website to get them, or UFC.com. So check it out, guys.
Score.
And, Mark, anything else added with that interview? It was pretty enjoyable. What did you make of yourself?
As we said before, Ian McCall is always an incredibly honest guy, and he's just a delightful character. And, well, to be honest with you, I want to see him back in the octagon again. I think that there will never be a situation where he can't be put into a fight, because he's an all-round character. And
yeah,
he's someone who can be put up against anyone, and you can get an angle on the fight.
Yeah.
Because he knows how to sell it.
He's one of the top guys in the world. He knows for selling fights and stuff. So it'd be absolutely brilliant to see Ian, get a good fight and get him back on the card. Obviously, his knee is out as well. He's injured at the moment. I'm not sure if it's that exclusive.
It's pretty exclusive.
But, I didn't see it anywhere on the web when we had a look today.
If you Google it and you don't get it, it's exclusive, I think.
Yeah, you should get it on Talking Brawls. And anyway, listen, guys, we're going to wrap up the show today. Mark, how much have you enjoyed the show today? Absolutely brilliant, fantastic, I thought. Anyway.
I'm literally overly excited now. I'm not even looking at clocks anymore, you know, because I don't even know what they look like.
And anyway, guys, obviously we love your feedback and we want to hear from you guys. So you can find us on Twitter at Talking Brawls, at Mark Moriarty 101, at Niall McGrath 4, and you can email us your thoughts on www.talkingbrawls@gmail.com. And you can find us, obviously, our sister website with the guys from talkingballs.net. So you can log on to that for football, all sorts of things like that. And as well, just you guys, we love you. Thanks for listening in. And
it's been emotional.
Yeah, we'll be back next week. Obviously, sorry about the one day delay, obviously, because Chris was down with the flu. So we cancelled the pod for one day. Apologies to anyone who might have thought it was up last night on Twitter. But it is going up tonight. And listen, guys, obviously, MMAJunkie.com. We'd like to thank Gorgeous George for coming on the show. Obviously, a big shout out to Chris Leaven. Hope his recovery goes well. Back in the octagon soon.
And from the flu.
And I hope, obviously, yeah, the flu. We need a bloody bad dose of that. And obviously, to Ian Uncle Creepy McCall, an absolute legend as well. And we'd like to thank Ian for his time and hope his knee recovers as quick as possible. And I hope to see him back in the octagon in 8 weeks or so. So, guys, chat to you next week. Thanks a million for myself and Mark.
Boom!
Boom!